Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Raptors were fired up for this one. I mean, they were certainly fired up, fighting uphill the entire way, which honestly was entirely of their own doing. Raptors, once again, for what feels like the 30th time at least this season, come out super flat, terrible effort, bad shots, and no defense going the other way, fall into an early deficit, really terrible first quarter. To their credit, they fight, they scrap. You know, they had multiple chances to cut it closer and closer, and they didn't ultimately force the tie until literally the last second of regulation when Chris Boucher wins the third hustle play of an incredible sequence where the Raptors had, you know, he had gotten fouled. He went to the foul line, made both. That cut it down to a 2-point, disadvantage for Toronto. Then Chris pressured Anthony Simons trying to bring the ball past half. And Simons threw the ball off of Chris, which then bounced right back off of Simons out of bounds. Even though Kevin Cutler is like literally five steps away from this whole situation, it's happening like, I cannot stress to you how close he was to this exact play. With a clear line of vision on this, somehow calls it off of Boucher and gives it to Portland Ball. Luckily, his other two officials come by and they, you know, convene. They didn't change the call to the correct one, but at least they offered a jump ball. Chris Boucher then wins the jump ball. The Raptors actually then gone to miss two more shots, but Chris is right there for the putback. So, you know, they were certainly fired up, but the Raptors, I mean, they lose this one again. I mean, they lose 128 to 118 in overtime against the Portland Trail Blazers. A really fun game because, actually, it's fun in the way that, like, it's like a Wild Water Kingdom kind of fun. Like, it's just sloppy, you know. Is everything above board? Probably not, you know. Do you really want to look into the details? Probably not, but it's kind of fun. You're just enjoying there. A lot of mistakes on both ends. Wouldn't consider this the most serious basketball. But at the same time, you know, I can't knock the Raptors, and nobody can really knock the Raptors for how hard they played. They really wanted to get this one. And whether that was because of the crowd, I mean, the crowd was, you know, certainly quite close to 50-50 in terms of just a lot of Toronto fans there. Whether that's the West Coast fans traveling down to Portland or what's the specific reason. But in any case, Portland's always had a lot of Raptor fans there at the game. So good support there, of course. I think there was also just quite a bit of like trash talking going back and forth. Quickly seemed to be really going at it with Scoot Henderson and, you know, hit him with the too small a couple times and was just like yelling and really, really emphatically trying to lead his group. So that was great to see. But ultimately, Raptors just didn't. I mean, look, the circumstances are not in their favor. Obviously, we can acknowledge that, right? I mean, obviously, on top of the injuries, we also had RJ Barrett being a super late scratch, like 15, 20 minutes before the game started, because he was feeling under the weather. So hopefully, he's able to recover and feel better soon. But you lose RJ literally like right before the game starts, and so you go into this already having to compromise, and you basically played everybody you had available. In any case, I think, especially when you looked at this matchup, and with Portland getting a couple bodies back, you know, DeAndre Ayton coming back, he played 40 minutes, had a huge impact in this one. When you looked at this matchup on paper, especially when you look at the starting groups, Raptors clearly had not enough size to play against Portland. And if you ask me what's the main reason why the Raptors started out that badly, I mean, well, some of it's Raptors didn't help themselves by taking quick shots, some bad shots that were, I think, 1 of 13 to start. So, you know, you can't necessarily put that all on just a bad matchup. Like, at some point, you got to take accountability for starting the game really lackadaisical and taking bad shots. But it's just a clear size mismatch across the board. I mean, the Raptors, obviously, because of the injuries, like, we just put that aside. This is not obviously by choice necessarily, but they start Kelly Olynyk at 5, who is a 32-year-old who, you know, can not really jump that much. Obviously, Kelly can do a lot of other things, but defensively, when he's your 5 going up against, especially when you're starting him as well and you're making him go up against DeAndre Ayton, who, say what you want about him, you know, he missed lots of short chances and you know, can get a little soft sometimes. But, like, ultimately, like, he cooked. He absolutely dominated in the paint tonight. So you're asking him to guard across the board against Ayton, right? You're saying, well, fine, maybe you're doing that, but can you give him some support, right? Are you playing zone alongside of him? Are you giving him other forwards in the group to play alongside him? And the answer is no. The Raptors started Kelly Olynyk at five and four guards. Gary Trent Jr., Emmanuel Quickly, Ochai Agbaji, and Grady Dick. So where is that defense going to come from? Like, I think after coming out of the first half to start the second half, you know, Kayla gave the report on the broadcast that, like, you know, she had spoken with James Wade, the assistant, and the main takeaway was that the Raptors needed to bring more physicality. I mean, sure, for sure. Like, yeah, they could have done a better job of that. But you're starting Kelly Olynyk and four guards. So what are you supposed to, what are they supposed to do? Like, it's not like these are four particularly athletic guards either. You know what I mean? Like, they're not starting, like, four Allen Iversons. You know, like, these, it's Gary, it's Quickly, it's Ochai, it's Kelly, or it's Grady. Like, Ochai maybe, and honestly, he only got one rebound out of the whole group. So I wouldn't even say Ochai was making that big of an impact defensively. So whatever, they start off really poorly. It's really, really bad basketball in the first quarter. The Raptors just could not generate anything. They were taking and just making silly mistakes all across the board. I mean, it's something where it's like, look, I fully understand. And it's not a hang up on the idea that the Raptors want to tank. Like, especially, by the way, if you want to tank, mission accomplished. This is a very key one. You needed to lose this one. But I actually don't fully suspect that that's what they want to do in game. And I'll get to that in a second. But in any case, they just came out really, really slow. Like, really, really slow. And yeah, I mean, I think for a couple of the guys, maybe they're still trying to find where they're supposed to be. Maybe they're still adjusting to the system. But this is a big chance right here for Ochai Agbaji, and he's not taking it. I mean, the first shot he took of the game, tried to go reverse on a baseline, like, you know, driving baseline on a layup, took off from outside the paint and tried to, like, come on. And just was nowhere close on the layup. Like, that's not even just he can't make a layup. That's just bad shot selection. That's bad game awareness. And, you know, he continues to have very little impact, quite frankly, on either end. I mean, defensively, he's okay. I think there's more room to improve there. But offensively, 2 of 7 in 22 minutes, barely even saw him in the second half, nowhere even close to be seeing him in overtime. So I don't know if it's a health issue or whatever, but, like, honestly, it's a big chance right here. You really, really needed somebody to play 3 and D, and he didn't take that opportunity. I think for Grady, you know, you're starting to see that, okay, he's guaranteed minutes. He's really involved. He played 39 minutes tonight, and he took 10 shots, which is good. He turned down a couple threes, which, you know, when he was, for example, turning down a three and setting up Quickly to get him a better shot, absolutely, that's awesome. But, like, you know, you do want to see him be a little bit more aggressive with the offense overall. But, you know, at least Grady's getting some opportunity there. But, like, yeah, the starting group, it's really just a lot of, at least in the current moment, just Quickly, Kelly, and Gary. Everyone else is kind of just, like, running around and hopefully cutting and getting open, but realistically not really getting that open for each other. There's very little screening going on that's meaningful with that starting group to help each other get open. And again, so it all leads to the Raptors being down 33-16 after the first quarter. Now, I'll give the Raptors credit because they started fighting back a little bit more and more. And honestly, I really did not expect to say this, but it was the Raptors bringing in Chris Boucher and Jalen McDaniels that at least helped balance out the game. Now, the reason I'm surprised with Chris is not that I'm surprised that Chris can come off the bench and give an impact. We've seen that here like 4 or 5 years now. It's just that, you know, he hasn't been included in so many games. And last game, he got included in the Phoenix game, and he made an impact. This one, he made a big impact, and you know, Chris was able to sort of showcase and play his game. And even McDaniels, who I've certainly not enjoyed his performance, and I think that that's just objectively true across the board for everybody watching the Raptors, but I thought he actually started this game with some energy, with some, like, dedication, and didn't force his offense, only took 3 shots in 25 minutes, got 10 rebounds, got a couple of deflections. I'm not expecting, like, them to come in and play perfect basketball, but we're talking about the Portland Trailblazers. You know what I mean? Like, it's not exactly like they got a lot of rookies, you know, that they're playing right now. They also have a really inexperienced group. They also have guys who arrived at the trade deadline, like a Delano Banton. Like, you know, you play like five solid minutes of basketball and you're basically back in the game. And that's kind of what happened with the Raptors. Like, they did really well. They solidified things, and they played, the bigger they were on the floor, the better they played. And, you know, I think for Darko, again, he just continued to have to adjust, right? So start of the third quarter, Grady didn't start the second half, but Javon Freeman Liberty started the second half, which was interesting to me. I don't think Javon has really shown that much with the group. In fact, this one, 18 minutes tonight, three turnovers, two assists. Just, again, I think that actually is indicative of the fact that he wasn't playmaking well. He was making some bad reads, got caught in the air, threw some bad passes. You want to give him a pass because, you know, he's been with the 905 most of the season and he's coming in a difficult spot, sure. But at the same time, there's a big opportunity for him. I mean, if you told Javon Freeman Liberty at the start of the season, hey, there's going to be a game where you're playing against a pretty bad team in Portland and you're going to get 18 minutes, like, I'm sure he would have hoped to done more than what he did ultimately tonight. But in any case, you saw Darko flip the rotation there. But what that led to was, like, okay, if Javon wasn't productive and now you're bringing Grady off the bench, then you're basically never really going to take Grady off because of the fact that you can't really go towards a more unproductive player, especially like later on in the games. And honestly, maybe he could have found a different time to spot, you know, give him some spot minutes. I'm sure, again, Darko would have had some regrets. But this is where my biggest confusion from this game is just, what was he doing in overtime? Because the Raptors actually made a furious comeback. You know, a couple of great plays. Quickly was leading the charge. Kelly was making some plays. Chris Boucher was doing really well. Gary was making some tough shots when he needed to. And then Grady obviously was there to space the floor. And even though he missed a couple of shots, I thought he actually was in the right positions, did a good job. And ultimately it was him taking the short putback opportunity with a short jumper, missed, but the Boucher won it or forced overtime with the tip in. Like, those were all good things. So they actually were making a push. And it's like, okay, you know what? I like this. I like that the Raptors, even though they could have folded in this game, chose not to fold. You know, they had all the reasons to. They had all these circumstances working against them, whatever you want to say. But they showed that competitiveness. You love to see it from Quickly, the leadership that he showed emotionally on the court as well. But just even firing guys up, even after making mistakes, you know, making sure to dap everyone, keep everyone together. You know, the talking back and forth. I loved it. Like, the level of engagement from Quickly was awesome today. And it wasn't like he made the right play every single time. He had six turnovers. But I liked the determination. You could tell that he wanted this game. He's been wanting these games. Last game, he had 21, 18, and 9 rebounds. And then after the game, they asked him about the thing, and he was like, honestly, I just wanted to win. And you could tell, because it's not just you're saying that because this is a good quote. He's saying that because that's actually how he feels. You see the competitiveness in his thing. So it's like, well, at least it's a young group that gets to play in some pressurized moments, overtime moments. And then you see Darko's like, yeah, I'm going to start the overtime with Jalen McDaniels in. And I know I had earlier praised McDaniels because he had shown some energy, but like, come on. What are we doing ultimately? Like, what are we doing? Are we developing? In which case, I absolutely want Grady out there for all 5 minutes in overtime. Or are we trying to win? And is this all a tactical approach towards winning? Because honestly, the general goal, I guess, to me, should be that you're trying to develop. Not even for me, like, I need them to lose all these games, whatever, for the lottery balls, whatever. Like, I think for me, I want to see the young guys get opportunities to get into the game and take bigger opportunities and grow with them. And what I'm seeing is, yeah, sometimes they do that, but, like, a lot of times they're just trying to, like, make efforts to try to win. And if that's the case, fine. You know, be competitive. But then we have to judge you based on what moves you made towards that win. And what are the specific tactics? What are the specific moments in time that you are trying to make an actual push towards winning the game, improving your chances of winning the game? McDaniel should not be playing in overtime. Grady should be playing in overtime. And if you want to say, well, you know, I'm sure Dark will give some sort of explanation, like, if he's asked, it's like, well, you know, like, I don't want to play a guy that many consecutive minutes, you know, and we've seen it before earlier in the season. You know, OG had a really great fourth quarter. They took him out for like 2 minutes and put him back in overtime. Like, I don't want to see him get cute with this. Like, just give him this opportunity, please. Not only that, but I think on the flip side, when we're talking about trying to compete and get more competitive, if that's the case, the starting lineup wasn't even right. Right? Like, you clearly saw how mismatched in size the starting lineup was against Portland's starting lineup. So if the goal was to win, that was the wrong choice. And then when you continue to go into, you know, the further and further into it, flipping Javon and Grady in the rotation spots, what did that do other than just create an opportunity where Grady couldn't sit? Like, what did that do coming out of the third quarter? Seriously, like, what was that? We just decided to throw that in there. You know, the McDaniels in overtime, also a really confounding decision. But honestly, the most head-scratching one for me was with the Raptors down two and Portland having the ball. There was a play where Simons was trying to attack on the perimeter and Grady was trying to cut him off. And whatever, it was a bang-bang play. It wasn't even that much contact, but the officials called a blocking foul on Grady. And, you know, to me, I was like, all right, not the worst foul to give up. You know, it wasn't free throws. It wasn't like Grady was going to foul out on that play. It was just a blocking foul. And you might say it was a little light, especially in that moment, but whatever. And of course, the players, they're competitive. They're going to get in the game. They're going to be like, okay, review, review, review. But it wasn't like, you know, the Nikola Jokic begging for a review versus Mike Malone, if you've seen that one earlier this week. Like, it wasn't super emphatic. You know, it wasn't like, we got to stop the game and we're not going to play anymore until you review. It was just like, hey, you know, I don't think that was a call, whatever. Darko decides, yes, I am going to challenge that play. Now, here's the thing. He got two timeouts in this moment, and it's about a minute left in the game in a two-point game. So first off, you don't want to be throwing away timeouts. Second of all, the play that was reviewed wasn't even going to result in free throws for Portland. They were just going to take the ball out of bounds and inbound it again. Third, Raptors did not have possession of this ball when the whistle was blown. And so that meant, even if it was a successful review and that the Raptors were, their foul was erased on Grady, because there was, like, you know, I think Portland had the ball, like, they would have to jump for the ball. So that's more of a 50-50 chance, because it's like Ayton versus Boucher at that time, I guess, would be the jump ball. That's a 50-50 jump ball. So you're thinking about it, right? No free throws. And if you win, still no free throws. You subtract one, minus one foul from Grady, who finished this game with three fouls. So again, no issues here, because there's 1 minute left. And on top of that, you have to, maybe you got a 50-50 chance at possession. So that's the upside if you win the challenge. The downside of losing that challenge is, number one, you've lost your challenge, right? Which, honestly, fine. Cool. I guess, you know, that's not so bad. Maybe in a bigger context, but in this context, especially when the very next play, there was a terrible out-of-bounds call that went in favor of Portland instead of Toronto, you could have flipped and used your challenge then on an actually meaningful and actually game-changing play, but instead you didn't get to do that there. You not only, then you lose a timeout for the Raptors, and you might say, well, I mean, there's still a stoppage of play. Darko still, you know, you can draw something up. Guess what? Portland had the ball coming out of that play. So guess what? That timeout just allowed Portland to draw up a play, which, in which case, the Blazers very smartly worked a pick and roll involving DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton dove to the rim, and the Raptors rotated over with a third defender to try to meet against Ayton on the roll. And the Blazers, almost as if they had come out of a timeout anticipating this, Ayton on a short roll stopped, avoided the charge, and threw it to Tybal, whose man had helped off at the basket against Ayton, and threw it to Tybal for a layup, 4-point game. That's one of the worst challenges I've seen. There was like very questionable upside and substantial downside, especially with the next play literally being a terrible call that disadvantaged the Raptors, and you lost a timeout in that. So again, how are we supposed to evaluate Darko on this? Now, of course, you can always say that his hands are tied. He's got half a roster. He's got changed players. He's got the situation where he might be tanking, might not be tanking, whatever. How do we look at the decision-making that he's making in games in terms of who he's playing, what they're doing with that, things like what are they coming out of the timeouts with? What are they going into starting games with? Because, again, you have all the time to prepare for games. It wasn't like the Raptors playing back-to-back. You had a time to prepare for Portland, and you came out shooting 1 of 13, right? Who are you starting in the group? All these things. It baffles me. And if you want to say all of this is just an effort to tank, well, congratulations. We really did find a way to lose, even against Portland. So, yeah, that's my big takeaway. I mean, again, winning and losing does not bother me. And, of course, I understand if the Raptors have some objectives that they can't necessarily state, that's whatever. But still, just this game was baffling for me. You know, I think in terms of the positives, I like Quickly's approach. Gary was super aggressive on offense, just couldn't get the threes to drop. You know, I mean, of course, would you like to see him obviously take 26 shots and give you more than three assists or make one free throw, which is he missed the one free throw for sure. But like, this is Gary's game. He's a tough shot maker, tough shot taker. Sometimes he actually made more of his tougher shots and missed some of his more open shots. He had a chance to actually go ahead in at the end of OT where, or end in regulation where Quickly had worked a pick and roll and swung it over to Gary. And he had a chance to put them up one, but he missed it. In any case, he had a lot of in and outs, you know, but I like Gary's level of engagement. I liked how much he was looking to, you know, swipe and attack the ball. Especially when you're undersized like this, you're probably going to need your guards to, you know, just contribute and just find ways to sort of be disruptive. And I thought Gary actually was the Raptors' most disruptive perimeter defender. So good for Gary. I thought Kelly, look, overmatched in this matchup against Ayton, especially with Portland also having scoring guards. Like, felt like Simons was looking to attack and string Kelly out in isolations. They were also putting him in pick and rolls, which was difficult. It wasn't like they were getting much help from other places. It wasn't until later on in the game when Boucher and Kelly started playing together, which, look, again, not to belabor this point, but if the Raptors are trying to be competitive within games and do things within games to push towards winning rather than push towards losing, we could have been seeing two big lineups a long time ago. And I'm not saying I need it all the time, but like, especially in games like this. And the coaches agreed, because that's eventually what the Raptors settled on to close the game. Most of the fourth quarter was Kelly and Chris, you know, and overtime it was Kelly and Chris and McDaniels in there. But like, still, you could have been playing two big lineups earlier. So like, why didn't we see that for like most of the season, most of this last week, even that Pelicans game? I don't think it would have changed much. But I don't know. It would have made me feel a lot better if they didn't lose by 41 at home, their biggest loss since 1996. Right? So, whatever. I guess you could put that aside. But in any case, I think Kelly offensively, you know, it's good that he found the stroke from three. That's going to be very important for Kelly. He is a spacing five after all. It's pretty imperative that he makes threes. And he's been a little bit cold from those, but we know he's a really good shooter. And making three or four, it's just a couple untimely turnovers, which is tough, but I get it. Like, honestly, in terms of like touches per game, like Kelly is really, really high up there. I think it's him and IQ right now who are top of the floor. So he's gonna have to make a couple plays and just make a couple of decisions. I think the difficult thing for him is he does a lot of like up faking driving and then sort of picking up his dribble and, you know, just trying to like turn something out of nothing. And a lot of times he gets stuck in those possessions and has to force a pass. And yeah, I mean, you can get a little troubled. But in any case, I have no real issue with how Kelly's playing. I love how hard he's competing too. I mean, just two steals, two blocks. I mean, he's really trying to, whatever capacity that doesn't involve jumping, he's actually doing a really good job of, you know, playing defense as well. Chris, can't say enough about Chris. This man started this week hearing, we want Boucher chance in that loss to New Orleans. He's come into the rotation the last two games, and he's done exactly what you want to see from him, which is play hard, make an impact in the game. Like, yeah, you can't run, you know, the Darko system with the bigs at the top, screening, you know, throwing high-low passes, all that kind of stuff, dribbling, maybe even spacing it to a degree. But, like, Chris can play Chris's game, which is pretty effective relative to most of the other players on the team. And Chris didn't force a shot, right? 4-5 from the field tonight. 6 assists on the foul line, mostly from crashing the glass and rolling hard to the basket. 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 blocks. 16 points in 31 minutes, you know, including 3 hustle plays in the last possession there to force overtime in the first place. You know, for his efforts there, he gets Chris Murray landing on him, you know, straight on his knee. So I hope Chris is okay. I mean, Chris, we just take it for granted how healthy he is too. But like, still, just the professionalism to stay ready and come in and be and make an impact. Just very happy for Chris, and I hope he gets all the flowers for what he's done tonight. The other guys, not that notable, but still, lots of good things to like about this game, and you know, lots of good things to like about Delano's game too. And I'll talk about that in a second. But before I talk about Delano Bannon, before I go to the three stars, I'm gonna bring you a message from our sponsor. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? I can't wait to see what Darko does against Denver. Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Okay, yeah, your three stars, and then I'll talk about Delano, who obviously is going to be Gerald Henderson. Your three stars from this one. First star, I'm going to give it to Quickly once again, just leading the group. I mean, was it consistent the whole time? No, it's going to be in and outs, but, you know, especially for a point guard, that's going to happen. I like how much he's aggressive and taking it to the hoop as well. 29 points, 3 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, 10 of 21 from the field, 4 of 10 from 3, 5 of 7 from the foul line. I loved how aggressive he was. Honestly, this, again, goes to tactics. If the whole intention was to win this game, they should have put DeAndre Ayton in as many pick and rolls as possible, and they just didn't do that. Whenever they did, they scored. Whenever Quickly got isolations on Ayton, zoom, right past him. When they even screened DeAndre Ayton, he was just lost. So I don't know why they weren't doing that every single possession in overtime, but where, by the way, they only had one made bucket and it was a transition layup. Like, anyway, whatever. But yeah, Quickly, yeah, really good game. I love his leadership as well. Your second star, I'm going to go to Chris Boucher. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 blocks in 31 minutes, 4 or 5, including 2 threes. And then your third star, I'm going to give it to Gary Trent Jr. He finished with 23 points on 10 of 26 shooting. Again, I would love to see free throws. I would love to see assists, but, you know, at least gave us the disruptiveness defensively. I think he probably had like at least 5 or 6 deflections in this game. So he played a good game, even though you would obviously like a little bit more. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner, that's going to Delano Banton. And yeah, I mean, Delano, I mean, big, obviously, he came off that game where he had 30 points. Now, a lot of people were like, well, he shot 10 of 27 from the field. Okay, fine. 30 is still 30, though. And with Delano, you never thought that he had the skill set to score like 30. And when you watch the game and when you watch the, well, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I watched the last Portland game, but it was like when you watch at least the highlights of what Delano did, it was a lot of pull-up jumpers, a lot of three-point shots. And of course, he could take it end-to-end. You know, that's always been his skill is, you know, pushing the pace and finishing with some size and transition. That's largely what he did in Toronto and you know, all that. But yeah, I mean, he's really improved his shot. I mean, 5 of 8 from three, including a late three there, pick and pop to just absolutely put the game out of reach in overtime. He also had an and one rolling to the basket, finishing through contact. He just played really, really well. Now, when you ask him to get his own shot, you know, probably not effective. You know, he's not that good of a pull-up shooter. But generally speaking, he's really, really come into a comfortable spot for him, and I'm really happy for him because I've always really liked Delano as a prospect. I never quite understood why we've prioritized other people like Malachi or even the other assorted backup point guards. It's not to say that Delano did the most with every single chance he got. That's not true either. And I think that, you know, he's explained it, but the other people explained it as well. You know, being growing up in Toronto and also playing for the Raptors, you know, I think there might have been a couple extracurriculars that, not extracurriculars, that sounds really nefarious. I mean, it's just, he's talked about it. There might have been more distractions playing at home. So he goes to Boston. Boston obviously has so many players. They're not going to be able to have minutes for him. But he goes down to Portland, and he's taking his chance. This is what I want the other prospects for the Raptors to take their chance. Like, there's no reason why Wara couldn't do something like that. There's no reason why Javon couldn't do something like that. You know, these other guys who are getting these opportunities here, I would love to see that. You know, like, you know how hype we would have been if we just got Delano Banton for free at the deadline, and he's been dropping 30 points and 25 points, including overtime points in this one. But I'm really happy for Delano. I've always been rooting for him. I just hope that he finds success. Like, I'm not holding against the Raptors that it didn't work out here, but, you know, I'm always going to be rooting for Delano. So happy for Delano. Yeah, that does it for the Reaction Podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. If you got any questions, if you got any answers as to what Darko was doing in this one, let me know. Yeah, next game against Denver, it's going to be a spicy one. So, yeah, you've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. And, yeah, please continue to rate, review, subscribe to the Raptors show, and we'll be back next week.